Week one of the NFL season officially in the books. Ended with a couple of games on Monday Night Football last night. Welcome back to the program. Pat Steinberg along with you. Now our regular Tuesday hit with our NFL insider, Jason Lacanfora. Jay, the Texans and Saints put on a show last night. 58 points. Really fun final 2 minutes. Drive one way. Saints respond, come back, and Will Lutz kicks a game-winning 58-yard field goal. That was a really fun offensive display. It was a lot of fun to watch. Are we talking about the Texans and Saints being two of the top offenses all year long?
I think we're talking about the Saints, for sure. I'm a Texan skeptic. I mean, six more sacks. Deshaun Watson, he's not built. You know, well, I was going to say like Andrew Luck, but Andrew Luck retired at 29. You know, he's not built like Cam Newton. He's not built like Ben Roethlisberger. He's not that sturdy. He doesn't have that frame. He doesn't have that same trunk. And he's already, you know, suffered significant injuries both years in the league. I mean, he's on pace for 100 sacks. I know it's only one game, and the Saints have some guys up front who can do some damage, but I just don't know how sustainable and tenable that sort of offensive approach is going to be for them. And at times it's because the offensive line, even with Laremy Tunsil, leaves a lot to be desired. At times it's because Deshaun Watson so badly wants to make a play that he's willing to hang in there longer than he should or extend himself in ways that it's not that he gets hit. I mean, he takes kill shots. He takes them a couple times a week. And I just don't know, man. I have a hard time thinking they're going to be able to get him through an entire season. And the moment he doesn't play, forget about it. They are the absolute dregs of the league. You can still run the ball on them. You know, everybody's like, oh, well, Jadeveon Clowney should have got more sacks when he was with J.J. Watt. Well, let's see how many J.J. Watt gets without Jadeveon Clowney. You know, that goes both ways. I don't know, man. Thought they did some good things with Duke Johnson. They obviously can get quick strike going at times, and you know, DeAndre Hopkins and Fuller catching long passes from Watson is fun. It's great football. It's entertaining. I think they're going to have to change some things up there, though, and it's a little late in the game to be doing it. So I still have grave concerns over their ability to keep their best player on the football. I mean, he was in the medical tent one quarter into the season. I mean, the guy was sacked 60 times last year. He's in the tent like 10 minutes into the season. Good luck with that, you know? New Orleans, slow start, obviously. I am going to closely monitor how often Drew Brees really does uncork the ball because it's a lot of tempo, short stuff, the deep stuff. Hit the one, obviously, the huge pass late, but there wasn't a whole lot of that early on. I kind of thought that trend last year had something to do with some of the hits he took and how he was feeling in season. So, you know, we'll see. But the Saints are a really good football team. I was surprised they got gashed in the run game the way they did. You know, Sheldon Rankins, their stud D tackle, who suffered a fairly gruesome injury last year. It's going to be a while before he's back, and maybe that has something to do with it. But there's a lot, you know, a lot to like about New Orleans, and you know, that was a big win for them. I mean, their division is very tough. You know, you got to win the games you're supposed to win, especially at home, and they did that. But yeah, pure entertainment value, you can't beat it for Week One. It was the antithesis of you know, that Thursday night game. It is getting a little old though, like the officiating, you know, like. I mean, I'm sitting there. It's harder to concoct a scenario where you can try to justify a 10-second runoff in a situation like that. You know what I mean? Then it is like the opposite. Like that. Of all nights to do that, that was a little bizarre.
What? Where do you see these two teams? I mean, you take a look at the NFC South. I can't really come up with a convincing argument for any of the other three teams to knock off New Orleans. I'm not exactly sure where Houston sits in their division in the AFC. Where do you see these two teams in regards to the other teams in their divisions?
Well, I think Houston, I think there's only one playoff team in that division, and it's whoever wins it. And I believe that's the Colts. And nothing I saw this weekend altered it. You know, Jacksonville loses a quarterback. Tennessee won a game, but, I mean, bizarre game. It was more the Cleveland Browns absolutely imploding than the Titans looking like, you know, any sort of prolific offense. I give them high marks for their defensive line, and that's one of the strengths of the team, but I don't know. I think the Colts, Vinatieri missed from 29, Vinatieri missed from, like, 42, and Vinatieri missed an extra point. Like, he does any one of those things, and the game's not even in overtime. You know, the Colts win on the road in regulation against a very good Chargers team. I know it doesn't work that way in the standings, but when I'm, you know, evaluating teams, especially this time of year, I'm looking a whole lot more at metrics and the eye test, you know, than I am the final score. So I think Houston's plight is what it is. They better find a way. They couldn't beat Andrew Luck. We'll see if they can beat Jacoby Brissett. But, you know, Andrew Luck had their number for quite some time. So we'll see. I think the Colts are the best team. The Saints, Atlanta didn't show up. Carolina had that game, were the better team, but couldn't, you know, kind of handed it to the Rams with a couple of weird turnovers. And so, yeah, if Tampa's bad. So if you're the Saints, you're feeling pretty good right now. I do think they're the best team in the division. I think they and Carolina will fight till the end, and I think Carolina will make a statement Thursday night at Jameis Winston's expense. If they fail to do that, that obviously, given the pressure already on Ron Rivera, that all of a sudden turns into a whole different situation in Carolina. But I thought they were the better team in that Rams game. They you know, there was a weird screen pass behind the line of scrimmage that basically handed the Rams the ball at the 10-yard line. And then Carolina was dominating game flow early, and DJ Moore had kind of a unforgivable fumble as he was getting deep into the red zone, and that really, those two plays were really kind of changed the game.
Your thoughts? I mean, 24-16 ends up being the final score. Oakland beats Denver last night to finish off Week One. Takeaways for either side in that game between Oakland and Denver?
I give Oakland a lot of credit. They've been through the ringer. All their dirty laundry's been aired for the world to see on Hard Knocks. You know, they've been ridiculed. It hasn't been pretty. But you know what? They looked okay in the preseason, and that's a big win for them. I mean, it's Vic Fangio's first game ever as an NFL head coach. He's got the Broncos fired up. I thought he had all the horses on defense to show more than they did, certainly, to make life more difficult for Derek Carr. But they got absolutely stymied by a tempo offense that was getting the ball out of the hands quickly and has the makings of a very good Oakland offensive line, especially if Trent Brown plays for them like he did for New England. So I give them all the credit in the world, man. Tyrell Williams and Darren Waller were two guys who I believe I mentioned to the morning show on Monday, or I certainly know I was asked about it, you know, who can benefit from AB leaving. Those are the two guys who I thought their workloads would be pretty significant, and they were. Josh Jacobs, great debut as a rookie running back. That's a feather in their cap. I still don't know about their defense, and that Denver's offense is bad. I think Denver's going to end up having a bottom five offense when it's all said and done. I think it truly will be that bad. So I think a lot of that, you know, probably has more to do with Denver's lack of personnel and a first-time play caller and a quarterback who is very limited at this stage of his career, playing behind an offensive line that is not very good. I just think it's a recipe for disaster.
He's Jason Lockenfor, NFL Insider, CBS Sports, and CBSSports.com. Some breaking news in the last 20 minutes or so. New York Jets acquire Demaryius Thomas from the New England Patriots, sixth-round pick going the other way. Just a thought on Demaryius Thomas, now a member of the Jets.
Well, I mean, the coach is Adam Gase, and Adam Gase was running Denver's offense with Peyton Manning when Demaryius Thomas was still a noteworthy receiver in the league. At that time, he was an elite receiver. Those days are long gone. A lot of injuries. He slowed down, doesn't run like he used to. And he's not a guy who I don't think people would say was like a tremendous tactician or a route runner, but he was so athletic and so fast, and he had great instincts. but you start to take those away. And, you know, I don't think it's going to matter much, to be honest with you. The Jets' offense got absolutely smothered by the Bills. You know, Adam Gase clearly was clashing with the old general manager, so this whole process of, you know, bringing in my guys and getting rid of their guys, that's going to continue to be a subplot for the Jets as the season plays out, I'm sure. But, you know, look, could Demaryius Thomas help a guy like Robbie Anderson, who's had his issues off the field and who has, you know, a lot of those traits that DT did early in his career? You know, could he be something of a mentor for some of those young guys? You know, perhaps, and there's something to that, but I don't think it's going to be it's not going to shift the pendulum of their season on field at all, I don't believe. And New England, look, I mean, would you rather have Demaryius Thomas or Antonio Brown? You know what I mean? That's kind of a no-brainer.
Well, speaking of Brown, you've got some contract details on Brown and the Patriots. You put those out a few hours ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get, again, barring, as long as he doesn't violate his contract, doesn't have conduct detrimental to the team, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's pretty ironclad. 1 year, $10 million. He gets $5 million of it as an actual signing bonus that has to be paid between the date he came to town and 2 weeks from then. So he's going to get, you know, $5 million check probably next Tuesday when players are paid. The other $4 million gets paid on January 15th. He obviously doesn't have that yet, and were he to were he to violate any things I just talked about, you know, there's always the potential he doesn't see part or all of that. $1 million base salary, that's fully guaranteed. Each week that he's on the active roster, he gets about $33,000 if he's on the active roster for the 15 regular season games they have remaining. That gets him $500,000. And then there's another $4.5 million in bonuses that are achievable at a certain threshold. I think it was 103 catches. If he gets that, that's 1.5, 1,298 yards, so just short of 1,300 yards. That would be another $1.5 million, and I think it was 16 touchdowns. That's not how, you know what I mean? So, like, the yardage, maybe. I mean, there's a lot of mouths to feed, and Tom Brady's got relationships with these other guys and that offense. You know, New England, it's like they run the same offense every week. I mean, their points of emphasis change dramatically from week to week, and he already missed week one. I have a hard time seeing him. I don't think he's going to hit any of those thresholds, to be honest with you. Maybe he gets, you know, 1,300 yards. But the bottom line is it's going to be 1 year, $10 million. And that's when I was writing about this over the weekend when he got released on Saturday, I wrote a column saying the consensus around the league is he's going to have a chance to make $10 million and then more on top of it, you know, and $10 million if he plays every week. And if he's who he used to be, then he could earn, you know, 14 or 15 total through incentives, and that's what it is. The surprise is, though, that he did get a $9 million signing bonus instead of having, you know, even more money tied to those per-game roster bonuses where you really are managing him from week to week, knowing you've got a hammer. If you were to make, you know, deactivate him, and that other scenario would be the only way he's making his money. In this scenario, as I just told you, he's got $5 million coming to him any day now.
Was reading your latest at CBSSports.com and I was really interested to hear your thoughts on Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. Look, he had a ridiculous game, 5 touchdown passes, and a lot of people very quick to say, yeah, he was great, but it was against the Dolphins and was only good because of the Dolphins. You're feeling like this might be more than just the opposition for Baltimore's quarterback, though.
No, he's going to be a highly productive, super exciting football player. He's got the makings of a franchise quarterback, and I said that the night he got drafted. When they made the move to get back into the first round, I thought that had the potential to be one of the signature moments in the history of that franchise. And this is a franchise who's, you know, moves to Cleveland in their first draft. They get, you know, Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden. So I'm not throwing that around. You know, they won 2 Super Bowls. Like, I'm not throwing that around loosely. I think that, you know, when they are at about franchises, I don't know, 25, 30 years old, when they're at their 50th anniversary of the Ravens' existence, you know, and you're talking top 10 moments in team history, the night they made that trade to get pick 32 and draft Lamar Jackson, to me, has the potential to be a top 5 moment in franchise history. I think he can be a transformational player and a transformational sort of person as well in trying to reconnect that team to this community where that there are, you know, over the last 4 years, attendance is way down. It's an easy ticket to get. you know, the way they handled Ray Rice, the way they handled a lot of things, the way they handled their dalliance with Colin Kaepernick, as short as it was, it's that covenant isn't what it used to be. And I think because of the style he plays and because of the energy he brings and because of his charisma and because how great he is with kids and because of just sort of this natural joy about him, I thought he could really elevate the level of their product, not just from a wins and loss standpoint, but from a, you know, from a watchability factor.
Right.
And it's very early, but he's also played now the equivalent of a half season. And he came in last year, you know, having to pick up an offense on the fly because they ran everything around Flacco up until the moment they made the quarterback change. And even despite all that, just go look at the numbers. Just go look at the numbers. It's pretty special. He's 22 years old, dude. Like, there's a lot of kids in high A baseball right now who were, you know what I mean, top prospects for the majors, yeah, who were 23 playing A ball. Like, he's 22, and he's been given this entire franchise, and I don't think he's going to let the Ravens down.
Great stuff, my friend. Appreciate it as always. And we'll hear you on the morning show Thursday to set up the Bucks and the Panthers. We will talk to you again on Friday. Thank you, pal. Appreciate it.
Look forward to it. Thank you. Bye-bye.